Repeat after me. Marichihi.
Marichihi.
Tejaswinam api.
Tejaswinam api.
Tejastvat.
Tejastvat.
Marichihi.
Marichihi.
So, marichi. Marichi means light or ray of light is marichi. But here, as Swamiji is using, it's just the nature of light or effulgence, because now it's being likened to tejas. The tejas is the brilliance. I looked up tejas to see just what kind of words they put to tejas, because it's really that kind of shining energy, that very brilliance that's emanating throughout your whole body and being. And so one thing they said is a healthy body, that effulgence that's there is tejas. Because we know what tejas means, but what is it? How do you put words to it in English? So here he says, tejas swinam api. Tejas swinam is in the genitive plural. Among the tejaswis, so tejas plus this vin affix means one who has tejas. So tejas swinam, among those who have tejas, have this tejas, api, even among those who have tejas, tejaswat, because of being the tejas of those who have tejas, he is called marichihi, because he is the brilliance, the light, the effulgence itself. And in a healthy body or in a mind that is enjoying a lot of shanti, that brilliance shines through the body. It shines, you notice it when Swamiji once said, like with Brahmanas, after they've been chanting the Gayatri or doing their morning pujas, they're filled with tejas, and you see the tejas emanating out of their eyes. Mm-hmm. You know, that shining brilliance. So that's marichi. If you take just marichihi to be that effulgence, that light itself, which is the tejas, the very tejas that's shining. Because Swamiji in his commentaries, he says, you know, light comes and goes. Right? The light of the world, it comes and goes. You know, but the light of Brahman is constant. There's no coming and going for the light, which is Brahman. So for Vishnu means in accepting the whole Maya Upadi, that light which is ever effulgent, right? So the one who is the light of the Tejaswis, those ones who are shining with that self-effulgent and brilliance, he is the Tejas of those. Of those who have Tejas, he is the Tejas.
Is it Tejaswinam api, right?
Yes,
it
that's genitive plural.
Tejaswinam.
Tejaswinam.
Yes, I think there's a typo in it.
Oh,
don't you have
Tejo?
It says Tejaswinam.
It should say, there's a typo, sorry. Change it to Tejaswi, short E. Tejaswinam. Mm-hmm.
And Marichi has nothing to do with the fish, wasn't there? Like an avatar or something?
It's called Marichi.
I don't remember.
I'm confused. We can look it up, but. Yeah. Not that I know, but I don't remember all the names of the avatars. So he says, I am the brilliance of the brilliant people. That's how Swamiji translated this Tejaswinam.
What was that again?
He translated, he said, I am the brilliance of the brilliant people. Since those who are brilliant is not just intellectual, but that's not Tejas. Tejas is that purity, that energy, you know, that shining nature, effulgent nature of people who have shanti in their mind.
You could sort of see that in those little boys.
Or who are very healthy.
Those little boys that were studying what were they called, the Vedicas?
The Vedicas.
You could see that shine in those little boys' eyes in a way.
I think that's true, yeah. Everybody okay with that? So let's go on. So just to go back, Tejaswinam api, Tejastvat marichihi. So marichihi, he's called marichi, because of being the tejas that is there among the tejaswis, of the tejaswis, those who have tejas. So, damanaha.
Damanaha.
Swadhikarat.
Swadhikarat.
Pramajatihi. Prajaha. Damanitum.
Damanitum.
Shilam yasya.
Shilam yasya.
Vivas vatadi rupena.
Vivas vatadi rupena.
Iti damanaha.
Iti damanaha.
So here, damana, the word damana, that ana affects, is actually kind of a, like a, makes a gerund out of I'm going, coming, walking, talking. So Dhammanaha, it means the one who is overpowering or punishing or taming or subduing. That's the sense of Dhammana. So here, so Swamiji says the one who subdues. It can be the one who subdues, who brings back into line, who controls, you know, who overpowers. Like say if you're doing the going against the nature of the creation will overpower you and push you back to where you belong, one way or another. Sometimes that's called punishment because your will is wanting to go in a direction that Bhagawan is not very excited about. So Bhagawan overpowers and pushes you back, and so you feel punished in a sense because Bhagawan's going against your personal will. It's not really a punishment.
Can you experience that? Is that experiential?
Oh, yeah. Of course it is.
Come on, Edward. You've never experienced it?
You must be a real darn.
So repeat after me. Swadhikarat. Pramadyatihi.
Pramadyatihi.
Praja, I'm breaking the Sunday. Praja would become Prajaha, the Sarga drops. Prajaha. Dhammayitum.
Dhammayitum.
Shilam yasya.
Shilam yasya.
Now we did this, didn't we?
Yeah.
Vaivasvapadi rupena.
Vaivasvapadi rupena.
Iti dhammanaha.
Iti dhammanaha.
So now, pramadyaha comes from pramat, right? And this is a present participle in the feminine. The word praja is feminine. Prajaha. Prajaha is, in this case, is feminine accusative, sing plural. So it goes like this. Pramad will govern the ablative in this sense. Pramad can mean the one who veers off or goes away from, is not negligent of, and they'll take the at fourth case. So the one who kind of neglects or veers those, so accusative plural, the ones who are veering away from or neglecting their own duty, the adhikara. The adhikara for a person is what is expected of them, what is their status in life, what is, just generally speaking, their duties, one's their duties or one's own duty. So he goes like this. Prajaha, accusative plural, the people. Prajaha, praja means it can be people, or it can be children, or it can be family, or it can be the subjects of a king, are all praja. So here we're just taking it as people. It has many different contextual meanings. So here, the people who are veering away from their own dharma, from their own duties. Okay. Then, dhammayitum shilam yasya. Dhammayitum means to bring back into order, to subdue, to overpower, to punish. But the idea is they bring them back in line. Okay. So the word shilam, you'll see this in Vedanta all the time, this word, Shankara uses it all the time. Shilam means several different things, but they all have something in common. It means your natural tendency, your nature, your character, the natural capacity. But it could be a natural way of being that because of abhyasa, because of continual practice, it just becomes natural to you. That's shilam. It also can be, just like, for instance, if you have a sattvic nature, say you have the nature of a brahmana, just a very quiet, meditative nature, that nature is shilam to you. It's natural to you. Where in the Bhagavad Gita, what was shilam, his nature for Arjuna, was that of a kshatriya. All of his, he was more rajasic with sattva underlined, okay, a secondary. That was his nature. And before he could really become someone who could really be in the forest as a sannyasi, practicing a lot of contemplation, just teaching, not going out, that nature had to be transformed into more of a sattvic, so that what was natural to him, what was shilam for him, was more of a sattvic nature. So this is shilam, that which is natural to you or has become natural to you for abhyasa, also your character. So here, in reference to Bhagawan, it's his shila, what is his nature, right, is to bring back This is a demi-tum, is a causal infinitive of purpose. So to cause to come back, right? That causes the people, to brings back the people, causes the people to come back who are pramajatihi, who are veering off, moving away from their own duties or from their own nature. He will, Bhagavan's nature is to just, you know, push them back into line naturally. You know, subduing them. They're going off on their own. They're off script. And so Bhagavan just, by his nature, will just shove them back into where they belong. And that can feel punishing, right? But it's not necessarily punishing. It feels punishing because you're out of order and you're being pushed back into line.
That's helpful.
Yeah, so good. So for who, the one whose Shila is this, one whose nature is to bring back into place, to put back into place the people who are veering away from their own duties, from the duties that are their dharma. Okay. Vaivasvata adirupena iti, such as in Vaivasvata, so Vivasvat adirupena, he says, I forgot to look this up, let me look it up right now. Vivasvat comes frequently, it's usually a name for him. For the sun, but he's using it as translating it as yama. So I just want to see what's happening there. Just give me a second. I was going to look it up. I forgot all about it. But I'm just going to put a question mark and I'll look it up a little later so we don't have to spend a lot of time. But what this means is such with a Vivasvatadi, Vivasvat, I'm used to it as Vivasvat, but he's Vivasvat, Adi Rupena. Like for instance, Vaivasvat. Iti dhammaha, okay? Mm-hmm. So the one who subdues and brings back. He subdues or punishes those who swerve from their ordained dharmas in the form of Lord Yama and so on. So I think he's translating Vaivasvat as Yama, because in the form of Lord Yama, that's the Rupa. Mm-hmm. Rupa means in the form of. In the form of Vaivasvat, Adi, and so on. See how he says that. But I have to look it up.
Swamiji says it's grace also, not only bringing you back, but it's...
I know, because he doesn't want to think. He does not mean that the Lord is all out to punish people. He also is present in the form of grace, just in case you didn't realize that many of the names were in the form of blessing, and this one is more in the form of...
Yeah.
You know.
Is this kind of invoking because the Lord is the order?
The Lord is the order. And when you go against the order will push you back. And then that can be disconcerting. Because the reason you're going against the order is your own free will, your own raga dvesha. You know? And so the thing to understand, which I think is beautiful to understand, the adharma, or going against the order, is jiva srishti. That belongs to Ishwara only in the sense that the jiva that has free will is part of Ishwara.
Right.
But the adharma is arising from the free will of the jiva. And then, of course, the jiva's, what we call jiva srishti, kind of the jiva's projection, the jiva's creation, is going against the order of Ishwara. And the order of Ishwara is much stronger than the jiva srishti, than the jiva's creation or the jiva's will. And so we feel great when our will is actually in harmony with Ishwara Srishti. To the degree that it's not in harmony with Ishwara Srishti, Ishwara, you know, pushes it back into place. And that can be painful to us when we've projected our ananda onto the creation. I need this. Even though you don't need this at all. You don't need anything in terms of your ananda or your wholeness. But if you're projecting your ananda onto some object in the world, and then you're running after it, if that's part of your prarabdha and in line with the dharma, you know, it'll be fine. But if it's either not part of your prarabdha and also, therefore, really going against the dharma that's being asked of you at this moment, you will meet resistance, because the creation isn't going in that direction. Otherwise, you have to think that this is an inner creation, you know, and you're the karaka, you are the doer, and you have to make your own way. But what if you're really not the karaka? Partha means the doer. What if the doership really belongs, if they even look at it as doership? The unfoldment of the creation is really Ishvara. And so that's what makes, puts the jiva into trouble because of ajnanam. You don't realize this, this body, mind, sense, organs, everything about it is only Ishvara. And you have the delusion of, caused by ajnanam of the kartritvam belonging to you, you know, and then you're projecting the kartritvam, in fact, the doership, onto your body, mind, sense organs, and you're projecting the ananda onto your situation or the various people or various aspirations. Yeah, and then you're going after that. But that works really well when what you're going after is in line with the karmas that caused you to take this birth and is in line with dharma. They use the example for that is if you're, they look at the power of the karma as a stream flowing downstream. You're swimming downstream along with your prarabdha. You know, it's like in the airport when you're on those fast walkways, those moving walkways. You're just flying right along, you know. And so when your cartridge, when your sankalpas, when what you want is going along, is really just a manifestation of your prarabdha, you're just moving right along. But you also have wiggle room. You'll meet a little resistance here and there, but you're still in line. You know, but you're going down this way, that way, that way. Still in line, you still get somewhere, because it's still within the scope of your prarabdha. But what about when you turn upstream? And you're trying to turn upstream. You may be making no headway at all. And you also may, as you get worn out, you know, be going downstream instead of swimming upstream. So that's an analogy that they use for that.
But can this be viewed just very objectively, kind of like gravity? That, you know, if you throw a ball up, it will come down. So it's only us who project our mental stuff to it, but it's just the nature.
It's just the nature. Yeah, that's right. We project all kinds of things on it. All kinds of reasons. We also project all kinds of motivations and Bhagavan. Why should I even have anything to do with him? He doesn't fulfill my desires. He's not helpful.
Right.
You know? He cares about everybody else, but he doesn't care about me.
Yeah, he cheated me.
He cheated me. Yeah. Very sad. Painful. Very painful. You have to learn as mumukshus, and you know, as you get rooted in your knowledge, that whenever there's pain, emotional pain, you really have to go inside yourself and be with it and see what is really going on there, and what it is that you're, how is it that you're creating this pain? That's the truth of it.
So the jiva creates that pain. It's not.
You're creating the pain by the projections and the way that you're behaving in the world or behaving to your own mind. And, you know, in my own experience, sometimes your culpability in that is not obvious. And it's not obvious because in terms of your own self-understanding, in terms of your psyche, and you're just not ready to see certain things. You see your own merits and shortcomings gradually in time. They're not always immediately recognizable to you. But you know what? That pain is, you know, holding up its hand for you to spend some time with yourself and see what's really going on to cause all of that pain. It's so easy for us to project it out. But we're feeling it inside, not outside. And so that has something to do with how we're holding it, which is sobering, but very, very useful.
Yeah.
And you learn to and everything I say, I believe, it's good, totally from experience. So it's just how it is, you know. You learn to stop blaming others and try to find inside of yourself what's really going on and your own expectations and where you yourself are kind of out of line in light of Ishvara, in light of your vision.
And we all have the capacity or the tools to do that.
Yeah, but the problem is, the wanting to do what you need to do is a little slow in coming. there's an emotional lag time between what you can do and know how to do and the actual doing it and wanting to do it. And there's a lot of reasons for that. The affects that take place in the mind are strong. They're strong and they're very real. They're very real in the sense of experience. That experientially, those affects and those pains and hurts and angers and bitterness and whatever they are, jealousies, all of it, you know, are very, very strong, and they lend themselves to projection.
Yeah.
You know, because this person is doing that, this
yeah.
person is hurting me, this person is making me miserable, or Bhagavan did this or that. And it's just a way of coping, you know. We don't usually think until we learn that, okay, what shift can I make inside to relieve this pain? And you know what, in my experience, once you start doing that, and once you actually make these little shifts that you come up with, the pain, emotional pain, releases. Not tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
But right then and there, it releases. And so it's helpful. Just like it holds up its hand, and then as you start getting in line, back in line, that pain releases and releases and releases. But it's not that easy to do. You have to get used to doing that, because you're going against your natural way of dealing with your hurt or your pain or your anger, which is to push back rather than to be with. So anyway, we have to learn all that. Let's do one more. 191.
It's a lifelong effort.
It's a lifelong effort. People shouldn't think, you know, this is going to take care of itself in a few months or a couple of years, you all be. Unless you came in with a special birth. Yeah. Means that you did all this last life and then you died before you really got clarity, you dropped dead, but you had done so much karma yoga. So many things, so much punya, so many things have been taken care of that you don't have to take care of those now, because you already did. You know, so that we honor you. Hamsaha.
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 Aham saha iti.
Aham saha iti.
Tadatmya bhavitaha.
Tadatmya bhavitaha.
Samsara bhayam.
Samsara bhayam.
Hanti iti.
Hanti iti.
Hamsaha.
Hamsaha.
Hanti gachati,
hanti gachati,
sarva sharireshu,
sarva sharireshu,
itiva,
itiva,
then hamsaha,
hamsaha,
shuchishat,
shuchishat,
iti mantravaranat,
iti mantravaranat.
Here we have three different meanings. The first meaning, as Swamiji translates, the one who destroys the fear of samsara. So let's see what that says. If you say hamsa, that hamsaha, so the hamsa is really, for the sadhus, they think of it like this, aham saha, I am he. Aham means aham, I, in the nominative singular, saha means he, I am Brahman, I am Ishwara. So hamsaha stands for that, what we call tadatmya. Tadatmya means that identity. So here he says, aham saha. So aham saha iti, tadatmya bhavitaha. For the one who understands, bhavita is a big word. It's who knows, who understands, but understands on a very embodied level. Their bhava, that being, they become that. So it's an understanding which is assimilated understanding is bhavitaha. So here, tadatmya bhavitaha, the one who deeply understands the identity, his identity, as what? Ahamsaha. I am that. I am that is the Mahavakya. The whole Vedanta is aham brahmasmi. Or if you say aham, Brahman is neuter. So if you say ahamsaha, I am Ishwara. I like I am Ishwara because what that does when you say, I am Ishwara, it brings in the whole Maya Upadhi. So the jiva, when you say, I am Ishwara, the body, mind, sense organs of the jiva has to resolve into the Ishwara Upadhi. Because there's no way this body, mind, sense organs is Ishwara. It's part of Ishwara as a wave to the ocean. Say, I am Ishwara. This whole body, mind, sense organs has to surrender through knowledge to the total upadhi Ishwara. So if I say aham saha, means I am Ishwara. Iti tadatmya bhavitaha. So for the one who has this deep understanding of the tadatmya, of the identity in the form of iti, aham saha, I am that. I am Ishwara.
When you say that, does the experience of the body change, or do you really feel like you're Ishwara?
Well, let me finish the translation.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
So, samsara bhayam, the fear of samsara, bhaya is fear, samsara bhayam, hanti iti hamsaha. Now here, this word hamsa, the first hum is han, can be taken as han, and has different meanings. Here it means to kill or destroy. So it says, iti, that hanti iti hamsaha, the one who destroys the fear of samsara. So who is that one? We have to go back to the nominative. Tadatmya bhavitaha. The one who has deeply understood the identity, his or her identity, in the form of aham saha, I am that. It's that person who destroys the fear of samsara. And such that one is called hamsaha. Okay? So here, hamsaha becomes a name for Vishnu, because for Vishnu, that identity is a given, right? And for Vishnu, there is no samsara. Right? There's only jnanam. And for the jnani, there is no samsara either. There's only Ishwara. The samsara, in fact, the rising of the samsari, you know, is the rising of the jiva, where your knowledge is bumped to the side a little bit because of your raga dvesha, your lack of vairagya. And so when that samsara bhaya comes, or that the world divides up into I want this or I want that, those are just moments of sadhana, where you realize that the jiva has arisen, right? And you pull that jiva to him back to your knowledge, or do inner child work, or whatever needs to be done, because there's a lengthy emotional lag time. Because your whole psyche has to assimilate your knowledge. And until then, the psyche, the buddhi, gets stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger in your knowledge, to where these little migrations, or whatever you want to call them, transgressions into samsara, as they arise, they become easier and easier just to bring back to you, to yourself, to be with you, to enjoy the life that you have. You know, you already have it. You already have the graham cracker. Yeah. Yeah. So the one who destroys that fear of samsara, the one whose bhava is the deep understanding of that tadatmya, that identity, is ahamsaha. Okay. That's one meaning. Then the root han also means to go. If you look at han in the dictionary, you'll have many, many meanings. One of them down the list is to go. Less common. Most common is to destroy, or to kill, to maim. But it also means to go. So here he says, hanti, gachati. Hanti in the sense of gachati, to go. Go what? Sarva shirireshu. The one who goes into all of the shariras, all of the bodies, right? So Bhagavan, as Brahman, as the self, pervades every deha. It doesn't matter what it is. It can be a human, or it can be the devatas, or it can be the animals or the plants. It, besides the whole creation, is Ishwara. Okay? But Ishwara itself has for its being Brahman, and Brahman is the self of the whole Ishwara Maya Upadhi, and also the self of absolutely everything in it. So if you take all of the sukshma shariras, all of the subtle bodies, the one who is pervading all of those as their being, not like space pervades a cup, but more like how clay pervades a pot. Right? Pervasion means that is what is actually there, is its reality. So that's another meaning. So itiva means or, this meaning, where you take the hum ahamsa, hanti meaning gachati. And the third meaning is actually, as Swamiji says, it's from the Katha Upanishad, and I think it's from another. Yeah, I actually looked this up in the Katha Upanishad. This one, Hamsaha Shuchi Shat Iti Mantra Varana. It's from the Katha Upanishad, where in the Katha, these two words of the this mantra, 222, the beginning of the mantra is Hamsaha, Hamsaha, Shuchi Shat. Okay? So here, Hamsaha, if you look at Hamsaha again, it says for that Hamsaha in the commentary, the Hamsaha is defined as the moving sun, the sun which is moving. So that would be Gachati Hamsa. But Shuchi Shat means the one who is shut. So Hamsaha means the sun, who is Shuchi means pure. Shut is actually from sud. Okay? It changes that sha because of the e of the shuchi. Okay? Sud means the one who is dwelling in or abiding in a pure place. So that means the one who is abiding in the heavens. The sun, he is the sun who is abiding in the heavens. So what does he say about that? The Katha Upanishad, Hamsaha Shuchi Shut. As the moving sun, he dwells in the clean place of the heavens. So that's just another way of taking it. You can look into the Katha Upanishad and it has really nice little commentary on that.
You know what's funnier is that it's not Hamsa as the bird. Is it a different...
He says here that here Hamsa is not the mythological bird.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But is it the same word?
It's the same word, just a different, mm-hmm. taking it with a different etymology.
Isn't Hamsa backwards? Soham?
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. I didn't bring that out. The Aham Saha, if I put it backwards, it would be Saha Aham, which would break into Soham. Saha Aham, and suddenly becomes Soham.
There's no O then. Soha.
No, if you take what's this is just something it's not it's kind of what you call Vedic etymology. So say you take saha, ham saha, take the hum and put it in the back. Then you have saha hum, which would actually be so hum if I did the drops after the Visarga. So it's kind of just a Vedic etymology trying to make sense out of it.
That concept is used a lot, isn't it? I mean, it's not.
Yeah, no, it's very. The sadhus use this. There are for the sannyasi. There are certain mantras that are chanted every day. Paramahamsa and Hamsa, they're important mantras. You know, and that Hamsa is recognized in the mind as Soham. Just because if you say Soham, that brings about that taratnya, that identity in your mind. So if you say Hamsa or Paramahamsa, Paramahamsa would be like Paramatma. Paramahamsa, if you say Paramatma, the self which is infinite is Brahman. So this Paramahamsa Parivrajika, Paramahamsa is always a name for the sannyasi. There's mantras that have Paramahamsa or Hamsa in it. It's always understood as standing for that taratnya, that identity. Okay. Let's stop here and go ahead and chant our I have it set up chant from the Om Vishwa Vishnu Vishat Kardaha. If you don't have it, if you don't have this with you, just
a packet at the very back with a separate.
Where are we starting from?
Page 8,
593 in your book.
Oh, we're going to start from the beginning then.
Yeah.
So page 8 of that is in the mantra. Yeah, so it should be somewhere near your notes, but it's not in with your notes. It's a separate thing.
If you don't have it, just listen to it.
Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Vishnu. That's where we are.
Beautiful.